Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kamma Daf Tzadi Gimel. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a specially marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 5 lines from the top. The opening piece of Gemara will deal with someone who attempts to invoke heavenly retribution or heavenly judgment upon someone else. The Gemara will say that he who does so will himself be punished first. That might sound a little confounding. The Gemara qualifies it and says that that is true only when there was another method of solving the issue, namely one who had the option, the possibility of presenting his case to an earthly court and instead troubled heaven to intervene. So with regard to that, Rav Chonon, in the opening statement of the Gemara, applies. However, if a person has no choice, or he went to an earthly court and they didn't solve his problem, then one has a right to turn heavenwards and invoke that judgment. This is learned from an episode in the Chumash where Sora Imenu, after having given her bondmaid to Avram, she gave to him Hagar for having children, and the story in the Chumash reveals to us that Hagar, the bondmaid, began to belittle her mistress Sarah, and this enraged Sarah, and she expressed her wrath toward Avram. And from the context of the Gemara, she was beseeching heaven on her behalf against her husband Avram. As time went on, we discover that Sarah, in fact, died before Avraham. So this is the basis of Rav Chonon's teaching. Now the Gemara. Amar Rav Chonon, Hamoiser din al chavero hu nenash trila. One who attempts to invoke divine judgment against his friend, he will be punished first. Shneamar vatoimer Sarai el Avraham chamosi olecha. And Sarah says to Avraham, my wrath is upon you. Uksiv vayovoy Avram lispoid lesora velivkosa. And later we find that Avram comes to eulogize Sarah and to cry over her death. She predeceased Avram. I believe you'll find in the commentaries that when we speak about invoking divine judgment, the heavenly court, so to speak, says, oh, you're asking us to judge so-and-so, let's check out your record and see how you check out in terms of piety. And most often, people don't make the mark, and hence, they are punished first. So, let's go on in the Gemara, Vahani Mili, this point of being punished first because of being Moisir Dina Chavero, is Leidina Baro. He had a judicial option on earth. And Tosfos at the top says Sora had that option because the son of Noach, by name Shem, he had a court, and she could have taken her case, her claims that troubled her with regard to Avram, to that court, and she didn't do so. Omer of Yitzchok, the triangle that you see here signifies, and we've indicated this on the side, are two memros of Rav Yitzchok. In both of them, you'll see there's some connection to Sora Imenu. Omer Rav Yitzchok, Oy lo latsoyek yoser min hanitzak. woe unto the one who invokes, who calls out, more than the one concerning whom the invoking took place. Tanyo Nami Hochi. And we have a Tanaic source supporting Rabbi Yitzchok's comment. I do want to point out that as we go on in the Gemara, the next line, has an alternative reading that you can find in the Tosfos, the second Tosfos on the page. So first we'll read our Gemara text. The source says, Echor Hatsoyek ve'echor Hanitzak b'mashma. The source in this Brisa is a reference to a pasuk that you find quoted in Rashi, on the top line of Rashi, Echad Hatsoyek ve'echad Hanitzak b'mashma. There is the one that calls out, that screams heavenwards, and there is the Nitzak, the one concerning whom the screaming is taking place. The pasuk says, V'chora api varakti eschem. On the side, we've included the context of the pasuk in Shmos Perichov Beis Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Pasuk Chaf Aleph says, "Kol almona v'yosain lo sanun." Do not oppress the widow or nor often. Im anei in Pasuk Chaf Beis. Im anei sanei oisoi. Ki im tzaok yitzak elai shomoa eshma tzakoso. If you do oppress the orphan, and then he calls out to me, I will hear his beseechings. V'chora api v'orakti eschem b'chorev. And I will be enraged, and I will kill eschem. Eschem is, Rashi says, shnayim b'mashma. Two are implied. Both the one who screams out, and the one concerning whom the screaming took place. So that the source now goes on, but retribution is brought upon the tzoek faster than the one concerning whom the beseeching takes place. And Rashi says, "Kid ashkichon basora," as we found by Sora, she called out and ended. She called out, beseeching heavenly involvement in punishing, and we find that she was in fact punished first. There is quite a bit in the commentaries on this topic. We're presenting it very superficially in the meantime. We mentioned before that the Tosfos has a different girsa, and instead of reading Echad Hatsoik ve'Echad Hanitzak, Tosfos says, according to the alternative reading, Echad Hatsoik ve'Echad She'ein Tsoik b'mashma. You can see the Tosfos on the third line from the top. And in this case, it says, whether it be someone who screams out or someone who has a problem but doesn't scream out. And Rashi, the Tosfos continues, Pirush, Bein oisoi she'ani tzayek olav, Bein oisoi she'ein ha'ani tzayek olav, Shnehem ne'noshim olav. You can have a poor man who's experiencing impoverishment and oppression. The poor man may scream out concerning a particular individual, and not concerning a second individual, both of them who are, though, responsible for the oni's oppression. And with that reading, we're saying that the one who concerning whom the oni screams out about will be punished first. Mistabro kevon she'ein machzir avoitoi ze kemoze. You have two people that are oppressing the impoverished one. And Tosfos' example is a case where a poor man, an oni, had taken a loan and given collateral to two parties, Mr. A and Mr. B. Neither one of them is returning the collateral in accordance with the Torah's dictate in concerning this matter. And the only one of them, though, is the subject of the Oni's wrath. So that's, as we say, an alternative reading. And the Tosfos goes on. Elo, and there's a girsa on the side says Elo de lahachi ksiv v'hoyo ki itzak elai v'shamati shemimaharin latzoik yoisir mimisha eino itzoik. And as we explained, if you accept that reading, you have two people oppressing the Oni, the poor man, and the Oni focuses his indignation towards one of them more than the other, even though both are oppressing him. According to this reading, it's not something that we derive from Sora Kamoshet Birish Bekuntris, Lefi Girsus Asfarim. Rashi tied in this Brisa to Sora, but with this alternative reading, there's no connection. Let's turn back to the Gemara text, the Omer of Yitzhak. We have another statement of Rabbi Yitzhak. It's a long point, and it also, you'll see, is connected to Sora. This long point states that when a person should not take lightly the curse of even a commoner. Where do we see a commoner cursing and it having negative results? We find this by Sora, who was cursed by Avimelech. Avimelech, for our purposes, as a commoner, even though in the Chumash you find he's the Plishtim king, the Philistine king. Nevertheless, he is not a positive character per se. So we're viewing him as a hedyot, as a commoner. And after the incident where Avimelech had taken Sora from Avram for his own, we'll say, comfort purposes, and the Almighty intervened and ordered him to return her to her husband, Avimelech had the claim that he was tricked into believing that she is an unmarried woman, and he expressed his consternation by telling Sora that this incident will be for you a covering of your eyes. The idea of a covering of your eyes, just like you covered from me the facts. You misrepresented yourself by saying that you were his, Avraham's sister. So too, you will experience a covering up. And we find that the son of Sora, Yitzchak, in his old age, in fact, experienced blindness, a covering of the eyes, so that the curse uttered by Avimelech came to be. Now, the Gemara. The Omer of Yitzchak, La'olam al tehi kilas hedyot kala beinecha. At all times, it should not be light in your eyes, the curse of a commoner. Sharei Avimelech kilel es Sora. Avimelech cursed Sora, v'neskayem v'zara, and it was fulfilled in her seed. Shenamar hinehu loch ksus einayim. This incident will be a covering for your eyes. Omar Lo, and here the Gemara explains what Avimelech was saying. Hayol v'kisis mimeni halo gilis shehu isheich. Since you covered up from me and did not reveal to me that Avram was your husband, v'garamt elai hatzarazeh, and you caused me this suffering. In our previous year, we discussed the punishment that the Almighty brought upon the household of Avimelech. Their inability to bear children and other bodily restraints were placed upon them. So Avimelech says to her, "Yehi rotzon sheyu loch ksuyis einayim. Let it be the will of heaven that you shall have a covering of your eyes." The niskayim bezara, and this curse was fulfilled in her children, in her son Yitzchak. Dechtiv ayi ki zoken Yitzchak, and it was when Yitzchak reached old age, vatichenu einov miros, and his eyes became weak in sight, namely he became blind. Amar Rabbi Avo, le'olam yehe adam min hanirdafim velo min haroidfim. A person should strive to be amongst those that are pursued, those that are persecuted, and not to be amongst the persecutors. She'en l'cha nirdaf ba'oifos yoyser mitor muvne yoyna. Amongst birds, you don't find any bird that's more persecuted, that's more pursued than doves and pigeons, and the hichshiran, and they are the only birds that are acceptable. The hichshiran kosuv legabi mizbech, they are the only birds that are suitable, are eligible to be used as sacrificial offerings in the realm of birds on the altar. Here we quote from our Mishnah on Daf Tzadi Beis Omer Aleph. Ha'imer Samei Es Eini. Person says, blind me. And he adds, Almanas Liftar. And he says, on condition, or with the stipulation that you will be exempt. And a person goes ahead and takes him up on the offer, blinds the individual. The Mishnah says, Chayef. He nevertheless has to pay. On the other hand, in the Mishnah we saw, a person says, Kras Ksusi, tear my garment. And he adds, Almanas Liftar, with the condition that you will be exempt. Potter, in fact, he is exempt. Omale Rav Asi Bar Chamo L'Rabo. My Shno Reisha Umay Shno Seifa. Why is there a distinction between the first part of the Mishnah where the stipulation had no effect, namely Almanas Liftor, and it was Chayav? In the Reisha we discussed the, say, the different types of bodily injury that one attempted to bring upon himself through someone else. The stipulation of being exempt had no effect. And in the Seifa, where there was an invitation to destroy an article, and with the stipulation that you will be exempt, there the stipulation does take hold, and there's exemption from needing to pay. Omar Le, so Rabba answers, Reisha, the first part of the Mishnah that spoke about bodily injury, Lefi She'ein Odom Moichel Al Roshei Evorim. A person will not be mochel. He won't be forgiving over his limbs. Omar Le, so Rav Asi asks, V'chi Odom Moichel Al Tzaro, would a person be forgiving concerning his pain? D'sanya, and we have a source that says, Hakeni Patseini Amanas Lifter Potter, hit me, injure me, on condition that you will be exempt. We see that there is exemption. So the question is raised, if you're going to explain the lack of let's say, legal significance of the stipulation of exemption in the Reisha as a function of Mechila, that isn't the case. Because in this Brisa you see a situation where a person isn't forgiving of, but yet once the stipulation is stated, there nevertheless is exemption. Ishtik. So Rabba was silent. Omar, so he said, Midi Shmiel Lachba, did you hear anything on this topic? Do you have any tradition? Omar Le, so he answers, Hochi Omar Rav Sheshes, Mishum Pagam Mishpocha. The Chiyuv in the Reisha, the reason for the guilt in the Reisha, where the person had invited the offender to blind him or cut off a limb, the guilt factor is based on Pagam Mishpocha, on the, we'll call it the insult to the family. There's a family member who is missing a limb or is blind, it causes a sense of despair, maybe a sense of shame on the part of family members, so that the victim himself has no right to forego on Pagam Mishpacha. That, by the way, is in contrast with the case of simply invoking pain in somebody through some type of punch or smack, where that heals and you can't, there's no lasting sign of the impact. There's no issue of pagam mishpacha, so there the stipulation of exemption will be of meaning. Itmar, Rav Hoshaya Omar, Mishum Pagam Mishpocha. Rav Omar, Mishum Shein Odom Moichel Al Roshe Ivarim Shalo. You see these two Amoroyim reflecting the Svoras we saw above. Rav Hoshaya, following the second approach we mentioned before, of Pagam Mishpocha as the reason for the inability of the stipulation to take hold. Ain't Adam, you can't forego on on your family's dignity. And Rava says it's a function of the inability of a person to be moichel. A person is never moichel on Roshei Evorim. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Rabbi Yochanan represents another approach. He says, Yesh hein shehu kelav, v'yesh lav shehu kehein. There is a hein, as it means yes. There is a yes that's really a no. And there's a no that's really a yes. Let us look in the Rashi. On the upper part of the narrow lines, the second narrow line, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Odom Moichel al Hakol. A person can be forgiving concerning anything. Umasnisen, and as far as understanding the Mishnah, Lav de'omalei nechbal lechovel, it's not a case where the victim said to the offender, Kate es yodi almanas shite potter. Cut off my arm on the with the understanding, with the condition that you will be exempt. Ella, what happened in the Mishnah? Kate es yodi stama. He said, cut off my arm. The omale chovel, and the attacker asked almanas liftor, will I be exempt? You're asking me to do it. Will I then be exempt? Klomar. You tell me, Almanas Sheaya Potter, on condition that I'll be exempt, I won't have to compensate you. And the victim uses the word hein. The Komashal Masnisin, the Mishnah that says that the offender will be guilty, will have to compensate, the Yesh Hein Shehu Kalav, Okagon Dematme Atmui. When he says yes, he doesn't say yes in a definitive tone. Rather, he says yes with a tone of wonderment. What do you think you will be exempt? So it's all a matter of intonation. So now that's Rabbi Yochanan's approach to the Mishnah, where the almanas liftor was a function of the attacker asking, "Will I be exempt?" and receiving a response of yes with that intonation. Now we continue in the Gemara. Tanyo Nami Hochi. We have a Tanaic source that supports Rabbi Yochanan's approach. We open up with an example where the result will be that the offender will have to compensate. A victim says, Hakeni, Patzeni, hit me, injure me, bruise me. And the attacker asks, Almanas Liftor, by doing so, through doing that, will I be exempt? The Amarle, and the victim says with a tone of wonderment, the Amarlo, Hein? Yeah, like, do you think you'll be exempt? Hare Yesh Hein Shu Kalav. That's a yes, that's really like a no. In other words, when the attacker says, on condition that I'll be exempt, the victim is really saying, no, you won't be exempt. But he did so through using the word hein with that intonation of wonderment. Another example. Here, the result will be one of actual exemption. Kra es ksusi. These are, by the way, examples that are parallel to what we saw in the Mishnah. The owner of an article says to someone, tear my garment. And the damager says, Almanas Liftor, will I be exempt? The Amar Lo, and the owner says, with a tone of wonderment, Love? No? Hare? Love? Shehu Kehain. There you see him saying, you hear him utter the word no, but the intonation indicates, of course you'll be exempt. And as we said, that's how Rabbi Yochanan understands the Reisha and the Seifa of the Mishnah. Rashi explains further than what we said. Let's take a look at Rashi together. Hakeni upatseni, v'omar lei ze, the attacker asks, Amanas liftor, will I be exempt? V'omar nechbal, hein, with the tone of wonderment. Yesh hein shukalav. That's a yes, that's really no, you won't be exempt. E Atma, if he says Hain with that tone of amazement, Chayav, the attacker, will bear the consequences, will have to pay. If the victim, the one who's inviting the attack, he says Hain with a tone of certainty. Benihusa means without wonderment, with an even-keeled yes. Then the attacker will be exempt. Ubraisa dileal de kotoni hakemi upatseni amanas liftor potter, the braisa that we saw before, where someone invited himself to be hit or injured with the condition of exemption, and the source said there is exemption. Bidomar nechbal kula milsa. That's where the victim said the whole statement. He said hakemi upatseni amanas liftor. In a case like that, it's clear that he means exactly that. The Mishnah, up till this point we've explained, was with the request without the stipulation, and the stipulation being a function of a question asked by the attacker. The Gemara continues. Shaber es kadi. Kra es ksusi, chayav. Someone asked, as we saw in the Mishnah, break my jug, tear my garment. If a person does that, he has to pay. He can't use the excuse that, well, you asked me to do it. Viramini, we now raise a source that will seem to contradict what we just said. There is a pasuk that speaks about a person giving articles over to someone to watch. And it says, Lishmor. If then something happens to the article while it's being watched, if there's an act of negligence, there are different levels of responsibility depending on different types of Baileys that you request to watch, but for our purposes, there is responsibility when you give it to someone to watch. However, velo la'abed. Not, however, if you give an article to someone to destroy, then the individual will not bear responsibility. Lishmor, you ask someone to watch it for you, velo likroa, not where you give it to him to tear. Lishmor, velo lechalek l'aniyim. This last example needs some explanation. We'll see more about this when we look into the Rashi. First, Rashi, beginning with the Dibor Masa, Lishmor velo labayit, ki tein v'chulei lishmor. There the Pasuk says when you give to a person articles to watch, Tifkidu et slo lishmor, you entrusted him articles to watch. Chayav v'pshia, the guard, the bailey, will be guilty if he is negligent. There is guilt then on the part of the shomer if he acts with negligence. That's when you gave it to him to watch, to take care of it. V'lo kshifkidu et slo amanas labeid o amanas l'chalik laniyim. Not so in the case of an article given to someone to destroy, or give someone, let us say, cash or goods to distribute to the poor. Delo karino bei lishmor. If you gave something to someone to distribute to the poor, and then something happened to the coins, the one to whom you gave it is not responsible. The kevan diomale chalkehu, since you said to the person, take these coins and distribute them. Su lo demafkid ninu. They're no longer considered the coins of the one who gave them. So if it's not the owner's coins anymore, to whom do they belong? Uman kotova. Who's going to claim that? Let's say, as we say, they were given to a party to distribute, and that middleman was negligent and something happened to the coins. Who's going to lay a claim against him? The aniyim lo motzu tavi de lechol chad v'chad motzi yomar. If you'll say the poor, No, the poor can't lay a claim against him, because each poor man that comes to this individual that was assigned the task of distributing the coins will be able, that individual will be able to fend off each poor man by Motsi Omar Lav Lididcha Yahivna El Alachrini. I wasn't going to give the coins to you anyway. I wasn't going to give it to someone else. You have no claim against me. What do we see then? We see that if something was given to someone to destroy, there's no responsibility. Why then in the Mishnah where you ask someone, tear my garment, that he is responsible, he must compensate? Omar Rav Huna. As we go on in the Gemara, we'll see two approaches. First, Rav Huna, and a couple lines later, Rabo. Omar Rav Huna, Lo Kashya, Ha De Osi Liyodei, Ha De Lo Osi Liyodei. Rashi says, De Osi Liyodei, the article was given to the individual first. Vikra the Kora Biode Chayov Ilo Omale Amanas Liftor. It was already in his possession, and he then tore it. If the owner did not say with the stipulation that you will be exempt, Vafilu Osaliode Me Kora Amanas Laabe, even if it initially came to his hands with the understanding that he should destroy it. So once it's in the individual's hands, he will be guilty unless the stipulation of Almanas Liftor was stated explicitly. There is, however, exemption if it's Delo Osi Liode, it didn't come into his possession yet. So when is there exemption? When it didn't come into your possession yet. Let me point out that what we're saying is understandably is vague at this point. Later, we're going to look into the Tosfos, who explains this explanation of the Gemara with much greater clarity. Nevertheless, let's continue for a moment in the Gemara. Omar Le Rabba. Rabba challenges Rav Huna's explanation. He says, Lishmor, which was the pasuk quoted in the Brisa, where we saw exemption, De Osi Liyode Mashma, that implied the word Lishmor was given to someone to watch. It means it was already in his possession, and nevertheless there still was exemption. Elo Omar Rabba Ha V'ha De Osi Liyode. Both our Mishnah that mentions there's guilt, there's the need to compensate for having destroyed the individual's article, and the Brisa, this second Tanaic source that indicates exemption, are both the Osliyode. They reached his hands. The Lokasha, Ha de Osliyode Beturas Shmira, Ha de Osliyode Beturas Kriya. It depends. If it was given to him initially for watching purposes, then the destruction of the item will result in guilt unless the stipulation of Almanas Liftor was stated. The Brisa, the other source, the Lishmor source, that spoke of in terms of Lishmor V'lo La'abed, that's the Osliyadei B'Toras Kriya. It's his initial acceptance of the item was not for watching at all. It was for the purpose of tearing it. Rashi, we look at Rashi, Ha de Osliyadei Meikora B'Toras Shmira. An item that was given to someone initially, and he took possession of it for watching, for guarding it. And then the owner said to the person watching it, tear it up. Chayov, Ilo Omar Le Almanas Liftor. That Shomer will be guilty unless the owner said, on condition that you'll be exempt. Now, let us look at the Tosfos. Tosfos has an elaborate explanation, but he offers another level of clarity. Tosfos, under the Gemara text, Hada Asli Yadei Pirush, Masnisen Shenosan Liyadoi, V'Omar Le Shmor. The Mishnah spoke about a person who gave something to a shomer and said, "Watch it." Ve'im tirtze likroa, and if you want, tear it up. Asay kirtzoncha, do whatever you like. The kevon dechos ala chefetz, since the owner had concern over his article, shelo omarle karoi, he didn't say tear it up. Ad shibo liado shifkido etzlatchila. Initially, he gave it to the shomer to watch. He was concerned with the item, so we see that he had initial concern over the item. He didn't say tear it up until it was already in the hands of the shomer. Ma shenoisein l'rushus l'koroi b'siyum dvarov, that which he gives him permission to tear it up at the end of his statement, ein omer kein kidei l'fotro, he's not saying that in order to exempt the shomer. Eleftumi milihu, he's simply trying to convince him. Ptumi mili, in the common jargon, you might say he's trying to simply butter him up or seduce him into taking it. Dahave ptumi mili hu dahave kidei yishmor lo b'rotzon, so that he should take it willingly, velo yidag, and not be concerned shema yidaktik ima yoyser midai, that the owner will be too particular over it. Tikra, if something should happen, if it should get torn, v'amud b'din hu d'karmale. The only reason he said in that case, after it had been given to the hands of the shomer, if you want, you can tear it. He didn't mean that. He didn't mean go ahead and tear it. He was trying to simply make the shomer, put the shomer at ease, convince him that the owner isn't going to be so particular with him. The afagav de osel yodei b'toras kriya shomerle b'shas nesina chayav ala kriya. Even though at the time that he was giving it to the shomer, he indicated this option of tearing it up. Nevertheless, the owner will be able to claim compensation, and the shomer will be chayav on for tearing it. Ubraisa b'dolo osel yodei. In the braisa case where we saw exemption, the item did not reach the shomer's hands yet. Shomer le, the owner said, "Tol chepetz ploni hamunach shom tishmereu li." There's an item that I would like you to watch. There, it's lying over there on the table. V'im ritzoncha tikreu, and if you should want to tear it, so tear it. V'achar kach not loy v'koroy, and then the shomer took the item and tore it up. The kevon sheina chasolov, since the owner doesn't show any concern over it. Rather, he gave the shomer permission before he even gave the item to the shomer. He gave him the option of tearing it in Cain. In a case like that, he was actually exempting him entirely from any responsibility for the item should he tear it up. Omarle Rabba. So Rabba, upon hearing this explanation given by Rav Huna, he says Lishmor de'osliyode mashma. The word Lishmor that was cited in the second Tanaic source indicates exemption even after it was given to the shomer. Not like you explained that the owner spoke to the shomer while the item was still on the table before the shomer took possession of it. But rather, even after he took possession of it, there's innocence. The hachi mashma kro shenosan lo rishus lishmor bilvat avol nosan lo gam la'abed ein olov din shomer. The pasuk is mashma that he gave it to him, the item, to watch. Then, and only then, will he bear responsibility. But if he gave him permission to destroy it also, he would not have the status of a shomer. Elom Araba, Masnisen, the Mishnah where we saw without the stated stipulation there would be guilt, b'da'osa liyodeg b'toras shmira bilvad. There, in the Mishnah, it was given to the shomer exclusively for watching purposes. Later on, though, v'shuv nimlach v'nosel rishus likra. Later on, there was this permission to tear it up. Shekevon shemitchilas nesinos nosel lishmor v'lo likra. Since the initial giving was for watching and not for tearing, v'nifkad kibel olav, and the one who received it, to who the one to unto whom it was entrusted, accepted it. Ma she'omer achakach likra im yitzeh hino ela mishatif tumi mili. There he's only tricking, faking it, trying just to use empty remarks. It's very simply not a serious offer. Ubraisa, the case of the Braisa, which opened with the Lishmor, b'dasali yadei b'toras kriya. There it reached his hands with the expressed intention of tearing Shemishas Nesina, already at the initial giving over. Amar Le Kain, he said thusly, the Kevon Shemer Lo Kain Kedem Shinasa Shemer, since it was stated before he became a formal watchman over it, Ein Chashash Im Yikra. There's no concern, there's no worry if he should tear it. Because Shekinim Lo Aso Shomer, and all the more so if he didn't make him a shomer to begin with. Ela omar le krak susi shvor kadi hamunach lufanecha shupoter. All the more so there would be exemption if he said regarding an article of clothing or a pitcher's that was sitting in front of him, go ahead and destroy it. There certainly will be exempt. So now we turn back to the Gemara. Hahu arnika d'tztoka d'asil pobedisa. There was a pouch and a little wallet of charity money that came to pobedisa. Afkida Rav Yosef Gabiahu Gavra. Rav Yosef, who was the one in charge of charity funds, entrusted this pouch of money by a certain individual. Posha bo asu ganvi ganvua. The one unto whom the monies were entrusted was negligent, and through his negligence, the money was stolen. Chayvei Rav Yosef, and Rav Yosef imposed upon him, the one to whom it was entrusted, the obligation of paying back. Omar le Abaye. Abaye says, how can you impose upon that man the obligation to compensate? V'atanya, did we not learn above, lishmor v'lo l'chalik l'aniyim? That one who is entrusted with monies for the purpose of dividing it to the poor, he is not responsible as a shomer. Amale, Rav Yosef answered, Anei de Pumbedisa, the poor of Pumbedisa, make its kayetz lehu. They have a fixed amount that each one receives. The lishmor hu. And in a case like that, the pouch of money is like any other standard entrusted article. Rashi, toward the end, he says, Kayetz lehu, mamon. Kayetz for kotsatz is something that's a fixed amount. So the kayetz lehu mamona, kach v'kach l'shabbos, thusly they would receive every week, l'chol echod, each one. Therefore, having a mamon sheish loy toivin, in contrast to what we explained earlier regarding charity funds where no specific poor man can lay claim on it, if he were to do so the individual entrusted with the monies could say, look, I wasn't intending to give you anything, I was going to give it to someone else, you have no claim. Not so in the Pumbedisa example, and since in the Pumbedisa example all the poor of that community had a fixed amount to receive from the charity funds, each poor man has a claim against the one unto whom the monies were entrusted. And since each poor man has a claim, it then falls under the category of a standard entrusted item where the shomer is responsible if he is negligent. As you can see, with the help of the one above, we've completed the eighth perek of Bava Kamma. We turn to Amud Beis, where we continue B'siyata Dishmaya, the ninth perek of Bava Basra, Gezel Eitzin by name. Before we begin the Gemara, we have some structural matters to note. You notice there's a diamond and a double underline that appear immediately in the Mishnah. On the side, we have a Nosei / Mivneh heading. The diamonds, Dugmois shel Gezel v'Shinui, examples of theft, and then a change that takes place. And the double underline, Lefi Eizes Man Mishalmin. We want to know, is payment, according to which point in time is payment made? In accordance with the time, the value at the time of the theft, or in accordance with another point in time. Generally speaking, when a person steals an item, there's an expectation from the Torah that the item that you stole, that item is to be returned. What this perek will deal with covers cases where the item stolen undergoes change. We've touched on these topics in the seventh perek as well, perek Meruba, and here we'll see more discussion on that topic. And what power does change in an item have with regard to the thief's responsibility in returning that very item, or at that point a cash payment would be sufficient in order for the thief to fulfill his obligation. So the Mishnah opens, Hagozel, person steals, Eitzim, Vasan Kalim, Tzemer, Vasan Begodim, stole wood and made the wood into vessels, stole wool, made it into clothing, Mishalim, Kishas, Hagzela. So he'll make a cash payment that will reflect the value of the wood at the time of theft, or the wool at the time of theft. Gozal, pora muberes v'yolda, Rachel ta'una v'gozaza. Man stole a pregnant cow, and after the theft, the cow gave birth, or he stole a sheep full of wool, and then he sheared the sheep of its wool. Mishalem, the payment to be made, de mei pora homedes lele, the value of a pregnant cow about to give birth. De mei rochel homedes leads us, the value of a sheep that is to be shorn. Gozal, pora venis abra etzlo violda, man stole a cow, and after it was stolen, it became pregnant in the thief's possession and gave birth. Rochel, he stole a shorn sheep, and in the course of time after the theft, v'nitana, it grew wool, v'nitana etzlo, v'gozazo, and then he sheared the sheep. Mishalim kishas hagzela, payment is made in accordance with the value of the animal at the time of the theft. Ze haklal, the following is a general rule. Kol ha-gazlonim mishalmin kishas hagzela. All thieves pay in accordance with the value of the item at the time of the theft. By way of the Gemara, we've employed a rather elaborate marking system. In the margin, at the upper corner of the page, you'll see something that we've entitled He'ora B'mivne Daf HaGemara. This note that you see on the upper left-hand corner of your marked Gemara is a general outline of this Omid of Gemara. There are Roman numerals 1 through 3 that appear in bow ties. Chilaknu es ha'omud legimul kushyos stiros. We've divided the omid into three questions or contradictions. The simanu kaf hafroda. We've indicated with a diagonal line, a division line. Alachson means a diagonal. Bein kol echad ve'echad, between each one of these three different questions. Gimel kushis elu kulim shayochim l'suyachas. Make no mistake that all the questions are related to one one discussion. Elo shekavanosenu, our intention here is litein revach bein advechim. That's just a rabbinic license to create a little space between the different topics that are cleaving or stuck to one another. And what does this enable us to do? Efshorus lirois kol kushya im sidras tshuvasov bifnei asmo. This enables us to see each question with the series of answers, each one on its own. So that in taking a sugya that's rather complicated with many different variables, we're breaking it down into, say, smaller units to make it easier to absorb. On the other margin, in our other margin, on the right-hand side of our page, we have a Roman numeral number 1 with a nosei, a topic heading. This numbering corresponds to the bow ties running down the left-hand side of the Gemara text. This is the first issue. HaGemara ma'ale stira bein mishnosenu ubraisa. Gemara raises a seeming contradiction between our Mishnah and another piece of Tanaic literature, a braisa, be'inyan gezel eitzim, a case where wood is stolen, v'shipan, and the wood then was sanded down. Im mishalem kshas hagzela, is payment made in accordance to of the value of the raw wood, dekana b'shinui. If we say thusly, so then we're saying that the thief actually acquires the wood through the change that he made in it. Or maybe not so. But rather he would give back the wood as it is, even though a change has been made. The structural note that you see features a crown shape. They represent tirutzim, the Yashev Hastira, attempts or answers to resolve the seeming contradiction that we will be raising. So those, when you see a crown shape, and if you care to look in the Gemara itself, do you see them? We've used a numbering scheme as well down the side of the Gemara text. Number 1 highlights Abaye's approach, and then for a number of lines later, Rav Ashi, you'll see number 2. Those are two approaches to resolve what will appear to be a seeming contradiction. In addition to that marking, a house marking will appear, and they represent Hezberim Shel Abaye La Mishnah L'Braisa. Abaye will offer his explanations to our Mishnah and to the Braisa. Another marking is a triangle which is used to Havlotas di'i boi, the expression di'i boi will appear, shemetayer hashinui dechoyzer lekadmuso. You'll see a change in the item described in the Gemara as a type of change that can be restored, or be reversed, and the item restored to its original state. Now we turn to the Gemara. Amri, we have a little star. Do you note on the left hand margin, and our star indicates lefi hahavamina. There's an initial thinking, and it's important to present this initial thinking. Hashlovim liyitziras kli heim, the stages in the manufacture, the development of a vessel, of a wooden vessel. Stage 1, eitz golmi, raw, unformed wood. 2, shifshuf, smoothing down, sanding down or smoothing it out. 3, asiyas hakli, the then formation of the wood into a vessel, the moshel, ayadei chakika. If you let us say were to make a wooden bowl, you'd have to then hollow out the interior. So you have raw wood, then sanded down, then hollowed out. Now, we turn to the Gemara. Eitzim v'ason kelim in. Sheep on low. Our Mishnah described a thief, if he were to steal wood and then make it into a vessel, that would mean it went through all the stages and reached a final vessel, in, then we say he would acquire the vessel and pay in accordance with pay the value of the wood as it was at the time of the theft. So that it appears that only if he goes all the way to making a final vessel will he acquire the item through shinui, through the change. But shifon lo, but if he stole raw, rough wood and merely sanded it down, that would not be a means of acquisition, and he would have to give back the sanded down wood. In a case of shifon alone, simply sanding it down, then we would not say mishalim kishasa gzela. According to the Mishnah, then, when does the thief have the, let's say, the leniency of paying the value of the raw item as it was at the time of theft? Only if he makes it into a complete finished vessel. But for sanding it down alone, that would not be a shinui, a change that would enable the thief to acquire the item. Similarly, in the Mishnah, it said, Semer vason begodimin, libnon lo. If he stole wool and made it into a final article of clothing, then we say that the thief has acquired it and can pay the value of raw wool. However, if, let us say, the thief stole the wool and libnon, from word lavon, he whitened it, he bleached it, he made it white, that would not be a means of acquisition through shinui. That would not be considered a change in the item, in the wool, enabling the goslin to acquire it. So according to the Mishnah, the thief is going to have to return the stolen product, even though it underwent a certain amount of change. Veromini, we raise a contradiction. Gozal, Eitzim v'shifon. A man stole raw wood and smoothed it down. Avonim v'sititon, stole stones, and sititon is where you would chip away at the raw stone, forming it into a, we'll say, more smooth, useful type of building material. Sitatami, chiseling it. Tsemer v'libnon. Here you have the case of stealing wool and whitening it. Notice we've dashed, underlined key words, the words that tie into the discussion we just had. Here we described the wool that you whitened, pishton v'nekeu, where you stole flax and the thief then cleaned it, mishalem kishas hagzelah. And here, even without taking the wood and forming it into a final vessel, but merely shifon, merely smoothing it, or the wool merely whitening it, even without forming it into a final article of clothing, the thief pays only kishas hagzela, only the amount, the value of the raw item at the time of the theft. So here we have then what appears to be a contradiction. In order to, let's say, benefit from the leniency of paying the lesser amount, the value kishas hagzela, how much would the thief have to do in terms of changing the item in order to benefit from that that, we'll say, the payment scale of payment rate of kishas hagzela, the time of the value at time of theft? Omar Abaye, Tana didon. By the way, note that this Abaye presentation is a long presentation. We have a long marking for it. Omar Abaye, Tana didon kotoni shinui derabonon dehadra. The Tana in our Mishnah is featuring a what he calls Shinui D'Rabbanan, a rabbinic level of change. What is that? The hajra, it's a type of change that can be undone, can be reversed. And even with this, let's say, low level of change, insignificant, non-permanent type change, and even so, shinui kainet, the shinui enables him to acquire it, and he pays kishasak zela. And let us say that that's a very big chiddush. That's a very novel point. And we have a bracketed section, because right after the brackets, the Gemara explains what do we mean by shinui de rabbon and de hodra. So if you skip the brackets for a second, Eitzim, Vasol, and Kalim, the example in the Mishnah of wood that was made into vessels, there he stole already smoothed wood. We were working on an assumption that in the Mishnah the thief smoothed down the wood. But as we said, that's only an assumption. No, in the Mishnah he stole smooth wood. And he made from the stolen smooth wood, he made it into a, he used it in some type of construction, in some type of vessel that can be undone. Can be if he stuck the smooth boards together and formed a box, he can just simply detach the boards from one another and undo the box, and lo and behold, you've got the smooth boards like they were at the time of theft. And yet, the Mishnah tells us the thief can keep the box. He acquires it through shinui and pays the value of wood slats alone. Let's go over. We skipped a couple words, but our Tana is telling us a kula for the thief. And even if the shinui that he did was a relatively insignificant type of shinui, it's a shinui that could be undone, he nevertheless can pay kishasak zela. And in the brackets, v'chol shekein shinui deraisa, and all the more so if the thief imposed upon the stolen item a type of change that is of a permanent nature. And we indicate that that's not the topic of the Mishnah, though. Our Mishnah is not dealing with a shinui deraisa, a Torah level type change, a permanent type change. But if you're saying for the impermanent type change, the thief nevertheless is considered as acquiring it through the change that he made in it, all the more so he would said to be acquiring the stolen goods if he made a significant change in them. And when we say acquiring, make no mistake, the thief has to compensate for the theft, but he's going to pay according to the rate of the raw material at the time of theft. And as we said, what was the example of the Mishnah? Of Shinui de Rabbanan, Eitzim Vason Kalim, which was featured in the Mishnah. The Eitzim Mishupin. He stole smooth wood. Umayniu Nisarim. What do we mean by smooth wood? Boards. Nisarim are boards. The Shinui de Hadar Libriosa, who? It's a, what he did with the boards in making vessels out of the smooth boards. He made, as we said, he made a box. That's a shinui that can be undone. It can be reversed. That's hoder, means go back, like for in Hebrew the word chazar, to return. The b'riyasa to its original state. De'i boi, mishlef lehu. The triangle highlights, as we said before, the description of how something can be undone. Mishlef means to detach the boards from one another, thereby undoing the vessel that he made. And let us explain, and let's emphasize, therefore, since we're describing a thief who stole already smooth boards, therefore in the Mishnah, no mention was of shifon, of smoothing out, was made. If he had stolen raw wood and smoothed it down, that's a type of shinui that doesn't go back to its original state. That's a permanent change. That's a change that cannot be undone. The other example in the Mishnah, Tsemer Vason Begodim, he stole wool and made them, fashioned them into garments. What did he steal? But Tsemer Tavui, he had stolen already spun wool. We didn't elaborate, as we did with the case of wood, the parallel with regard to wool and clothing manufacture. The assumption was that from raw wool, you'd have to first spin it and then fashion clothing. But that's not what happened in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, he had stolen already spun wool. And from the spun wool, he fashioned a garment. The shinui, the hoder, lebriyasa, hu. That too is a type of change. Taking the spun wool and making it into a garment is a type of change that can be undone. The iboy susule. He can simply unravel the garment that he, knitted from the spun wool. And our Mishnah says, even so, the shinui is effective in acquiring it, on behalf of in the thief acquiring it, so that he pays according to the value of the wool at the time of theft, not the finished garment. And if that's the case with a shinui that's not permanent, the kol shekein shinui d'oraisa, and all the more so if the thief imposed upon the item, the stolen item, a type of change that cannot be undone, a permanent type change, he certainly would be chayev to pay kishas hagzela. V'tana bora, the bora, like the word brisa, the source that was presented in the Gemara as seemingly contradictory, shinui d'oraisa katani v'shinui d'rabbanan lo katani. The brisa featured a case of shinui d'oraisa, permanent change, and that was if you stole, for example, raw wood and then sanded it down. That is the type of shinui that certainly the thief will acquire it and pay kishas hagzela. So as far as the Bryce's agenda is concerned, it was interested in teaching us the permanent type change. It wasn't interested in dealing with the topic of shinui derabbanan. But as far as Abaye is concerned, there's no contradiction. The Mishnah was covering both. The Mishnah featured shinui derabbanan, and all the more so shinui deraisa, the gazlan would pay kishas hagzela. The Braisa simply taught the case of shinui deraisa, but not necessarily to exclude shinui derabbanan. It simply didn't deal with shinui derabbanan. So there's no contradiction. Rav Ashi Omar, Tana didon nami shinui deraisa kotoni. You can see with our markings that Rav Ashi is a second approach to dealing with the two Tanaic sources. Our Mishnah, says Rav Ashi, is also featuring shinui deraisa. According to Rav Ashi, then, only with a major change, with a permanent type change, will we be able to deal leniently with the ganav and with the gazlan and say, you pay kishas hagzela. And what's the shinui deraisa? Eitzim vason kelim, the wood that was made into vessels. Buchani. Buchani would be a pestle. It's a vessel that's used for crushing spices, as you have in the case of a mortar and pestle. Dahainu shifon. The formation of a vessel, in this case, stealing the raw wood and making it into a vessel, is simply by smoothing down the wood. There's no hollowing out stage. So the Mishnah is describing stealing raw wool, imposing upon it a permanent change, which results immediately in it becoming a vessel. As we described, taking raw wood and forming it into a buchani, a vessel for crushing spices. So the vessel is formed without what we originally had said was a third stage in vessel manufacture that wasn't necessary over here. So you were able to form a vessel by simply smoothing it out, which is shifon. And that was the example that you saw in the Braisa itself, that resulted in Mishalim Kishas Hagzela, where he stole Eitzim and smoothed it out. So the Mishnah and the Braisa are one in the same. Tsemer vason begodim, stealing of wool forming into clothing, is a case of nimti. Nimti, in my understanding, is something like felt. It's where the wool is not spun, it's rather compressed into forming an article of clothing. Dahainu shinui delo hodar. For our purposes, in the case of the wool, there's no stage here of whitening it, of bleaching it. So that in the case of the Mishnah, just like in the case of the Braisa, we were dealing with a permanent change in the item. As far as the Mishnah is concerned, it was made into nimti, where there is no libun stage. But in a case where a thief would steal wool and subject it to libun, to bleaching, that also would be a means of acquisition, and he would pay kishas hagzela. As you can see, we have the slash mark that we introduced earlier as being a type of pause, so that what was the issue we dealt with under Roman numeral number 1? Very simply, the resolution of the Mishnah and what seemed to be a contradictory Braisa. We saw Abaye's method of resolving and Rav Ashi's method of resolving. In the course of our discussion, we touched upon libun, bleaching. And in the Braisa, mention was made that libun was a type of shinui, a permanent type shinui. We have a little star to the side of the Gemara text, which enables you to refer back to where that was mentioned. So, libun mentioned in the Braisa above, according to everything we've learned till now, was an example of shinui deraisa, a type of permanent change. And now we're going to ask about that. Once again, the Gemara will present a source that seems to contradict what we have just said. And in order to resolve that, you'll see several approaches. Do you notice a trapezoid or volcano shape that will appear on this? And you'll see Abaye, Rava, Rav Chiya bar Oven, all marked with that volcano shape. On the side of the Gemara, under our Nosei Mivne heading, where you see a Roman numeral number 2 presented in a bow tie, the volcano shape appears. Chuvos liyashev stira b'inyan im libun semer nechshav shinui liknois b'reishis hagez. Is whitening, the bleaching of wool, considered a shinui, a change which would enable one to acquire? And we'll see in the context of reishis hagez. Reishis Hagez is a mitzvah where, after shearing one's sheep, assuming that there's a certain minimum amount, a portion of that, of one's shearings, are given to the Kohen. Now, the Gemara. Felibun mi havei shinui, is whitening of wool considered a real change, a shinui doraisa, where we can say with certainty that the thief, if he does libun to the wool, he acquires it? Ve'ramini, we raise a contradiction from the following source. Lo hispik litnoi loi ad shetzavai potter. If the owner of sheep didn't give the shearings to the Kohen until he, the owner of the sheep, dyed the wool, tzavo is to dye the wool, potter, he is exempt from the mitzvah, he's exempted himself from giving it to the Kohen. Why? Because he acquired it, the owner acquired the wool through shinui, through imposing a change to it. Libno velo tzavo, if he merely whitened the wool and didn't dye it, chayav, he remains obligated to fulfill the mitzvah of Reishis of Gez, of delivering the wool, the portion of his shearings, to the Kohen. What do we see? We see that libno, whitening it, is not a method of acquisition. It doesn't represent a change. Omar Abaye, lo kashya, there is no contradiction. HaRabbi Shimon HaRabbanan, there are two schools of thought on this topic. Tesanya, gozuzoi, tavoi, v'argoi, ein mitstaref. The man sheared his sheep and spun the wool and wove it, quantities that he of wool that he's done this to will not join up. Ein mitstaref, they won't join up to produce the minimum amount that obligate him to fulfill the mitzvah. Libno, let's say he sheared his sheep and whitened the wool. Rabbi Shimon Omer, ein mitzaref. The whitening of the wool will, in the process of his shearing the wool and whitening it, will prevent the quantities of wool that he's producing from joining up. So that, according to Rabbi Shimon, the whitening is a shinui, as a significant shinui, enabling the owner to exempt himself, to acquire it in effect, and exempt himself from the mitzvah of reishis hagez. V'chachomim omrim mitztaref. And the Chum say the fact that he's whitening it in the interim doesn't prevent the different quantities of wool from adding up to the minimum amount obligating the owner in reishis hagez, in giving the shearings, the portion of the shearings to the Kohen. So that would be a resolution of the two sources. Above, when we mentioned that Libun is considered a significant change, that would be authored by Rabbi Shimon. The source that we saw here that said Libno Velot Savo, he still is Chayev, that would be according to the Rabbanan. Rava Omar, Hava Ha Rabbi Shimon. Both Tanaic sources are in accordance with Rabbi Shimon. Velo Kashia, Ha Denafse Nefutzi, Ha Desarke Saruki. Nafse Nefutzi is a process of cleansing the wool, of cleaning the wool from debris, but it's not a major change in the wool. So that level of Libun that's achieved through Nafse Nefutzi would be the type of Libun that we would be able to say the wool would be mitztaref, and it's not considered a change, and that would be the source that said Libno velo tzavo chayov, because in that source he merely did nefutzi to it. Hodasaki Suruki, if he used a comb to comb the wool and thereby cleanse it from its debris, that is where you have a significant change, and there we would say, like we saw above, that if the thief did that, he would acquire it and pay only kishas hagzela. Reb Chia bar Oven Omar, ha de chivrei chavurei chivrei, ha de kavrei kavrei. Reb Chia also refers to two different types of whitening. Chavrei chavrei, the word chiver means whiten. There he's merely, I would assume, he's simply rinsing it out. That's not a significant change. But kavri kavri, that's where he uses gofris. Gofris sometimes is translated as sulfur. Whatever, it's a type of mineral that, when used in the context of whitening wool, creates a very significant high level of whiteness, of brightness. That's a significant type of change. And with that, there is acquisition. So, as we indicated before with our structural notation, Roman numeral number 2 dealt with what appeared to be a contradiction regarding the topic of Libun and its ability to acquire. We saw 3 different resolutions of that contradiction. Now we have another stage of discussion. We have Roman numeral number 3 on the side of the Gemara under our Nosei / Mivneh heading. A diamond marking will appear, and they are Tshuvos LaHasbir Shitas Reb Shimon, responses or answers to explain Shitas Rabbi Shimon Shebemokim In one place, Reb Shimon indicates that even dying is not a method of acquisition. Another place, we see that Reb Shimon says that merely whitening the wool, which is seemingly a less significant process or a less significant level of change, that does acquire. Now the Gemara. We here open with a long question. Hashta tseva l'Rebbe Shimon lo have shinui. We'll see that in a source coming up. According to Rebbe Shimon, dying is not a significant change. Libun have shinui. Can merely whitening the wool be considered a change? And we indicated that according to Rebbe Shimon, whitening is considered a change. Disanya. Gozas rishon v'tzavoy rishon v'tavoy rishon v'argoy ein mitzdarif. This too deals with reishis hagez. Person sheared his first sheep, dyed the wool, and spun it, and wove it, and did that sheep by sheep. The wool quantities will not join up to form the requisite minimum amount of wool to obligate him in Reishis Hagez, in the tithe, the wool tithe given to the Kohen. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Shimon, and here we dashed underline Rabbi Shimon, this is really the focus of our discussion. Tzavoi mitzdaref. If he sheared a sheep, dyed the wool, and then another sheep and dyed the wool, that would not be considered an interruption in the joining up to form the minimum quantity obligated in the wool tithe. What does that show us? That dying is not a shinui, it doesn't constitute a significant change. And now, once again, what's the problem over here? The opening of this section of Gemara stated, mind you, dying according to Reb Shimon is not a change. How in the world could Reb Shimon refer to Libun as a change? Omar Abaye, lo kashya. There's no contradiction here. Ha Rabbanan Ali Rabbi Shimon. Ha Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda Libun Rabbi Shimon. There's only two different schools of thought in explaining the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. You have Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda interpreting Rabbi Shimon as extreme in his approach of non-change. Namely, according to Reb Shimon Yehuda, as far as he is concerned, Reb Shimon holds that even dying is not a change, and certainly whitening would not be a change. You have then the Rabbanan, Aliba to Reb Shimon, who would disagree. They would say that whitening is a change, and certainly dying is a change. When you have two different approaches, two different opinions, that's not a contradiction. That's simply two different opinions. Rava Omar li'olam lo pligi rabbanan olei de Reb Shimon ben Yehuda. According to Rava, there's no argument between these two approaches. V'shaini tseva, contrary to what we thought earlier, tseva, dying is a less significant type of change. Hayo v'yachol ha'viroi al yedei tzofun. The dyed articles can be restored to their original white color through tzofun, a type of soap which dissolves or removes dyes from clothing. So in that sense, libun is a more significant type change than dying. The dying can be reversed, as opposed to the libun not reversed. V'chi katani hasam lo hispik litnei loy ad shitzavoy potter, and the source that said that if the owner didn't give the wolves to the Kohen until he dyed it, he would be exempt, which would indicate that the dying is significant. Ukimno kedivrei hakol, and we're explaining that is in accordance with everybody. Bekol ilan, the law over. That's where the die that was used was kola ilan. It's a type of dye. It's a bluish dye that lo ovar means it's not removed. It can't be removed through the tzafun. So it's a permanent type change. So as far as rova is concerned, we've essentially resolved the issue of dyeing and whitening, the various sources. When the dyeing is an impermanent type dyeing, where it can be removed by tzofun, so it doesn't constitute a shinui. Where the dye is kala ilan, it does represent a shinui. And as far as libun is concerned, we already explained that libun could be done in such a way that it's a permanent type change. And a slash mark appears, and at this point then we start a new train of thought. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei slash mivne heading. The triangle that you see highlights Abaye. Later, on the next omen of Gemara, you'll see an inverted triangle on Tzadi Dalet Omen Aleph, where Rava's name is highlighted. Abaye mevi rishimo shel chamisha tanoim shusoyver shein b'deya sheshinu enokena. Abaye presents a list of five tanoim, where, according to Abaye's way of thinking, they all hold that change, shinui, doesn't acquire. And when we say change doesn't acquire, it will be, according to Abaye, even a very extensive, very significant, very permanent type change doesn't acquire. And by letter of the law, if you're talking about a theft, the changed item itself would have to be given back. There would be no mishalin kishas hagzela, no leniency of paying in accordance with the value at the time of the theft. So shinui, according to Abaye, as far as these five tanaim are concerned, eino kaina is an expression we should familiarize ourselves with, and that is shinui b'mekoyma oimeid. Shinui, though there's a change, the item remains as it was originally. Meaning, the change does not enable acquisition to take place. Mirza Shem in our next year will then get to Rava, who basically undoes everything that Abaye claims. But let's get started and see the beginning of this discussion with Abaye and his presentation. Omar Abaye, and here we list off the names: Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, Beis Shammai, Rabbi Loz ben Yankiv, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Rabbi Shmuel. Kulu sviru lehu shinui b'mekaymai oimeid. That a change does not, a change in the item does not change the ownership of the item, though the item underwent change. B'mekaymai oimeid, Rashi toward the end says, Ein zoz mirshus b'ilam rishonim afilu nishtanet. The item that underwent change doesn't move, doesn't depart from the domain of the owner, even though the item has undergone change. As we go on, you'll see a double underline highlighting the names. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda ha Damoran. You have a little star to the side of the Gemara text, enables you to see where we saw him before. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda spoke about the wool, and he said, Tzavoy, even though the owner dyed the wool, a seemingly significant change, Mitztaref, it still joins up. That doesn't represent an acquisition of the wool on the part of the owner acquiring it for himself, exempting him. Not at all. It doesn't exempt him. The wools that he dyed will continue to join up with one another to form the minimum quantity for Reishis Hagez. You can guess, many of you will probably guess what Rava would do with that. He will tell you, and if you want, you can even skip ahead. For those of you who have Daf Tzadi Dalet available, Rava will systematically undo everything Abaye says. You'll notice the inverted Rava on Tzadi Dalet Omid Aleph, and in the middle of the page, you see number one, Reb Shimon Yehuda, he says Hasam. There's, in effect, according to Rava, all of these Tanoim will tell you that Shinui does acquire, but it has to be a significant Shinui. There, it's Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda says that the Tseva doesn't acquire. He's limited to that example, where Rava tells you, Ad kano kom Rabbi Shimon Yehuda, hasam ela b'tseva heil v'yochol aviro ayadei tzafun. I'm sure most of you guessed that the Tseva is a very insignificant type change. It's something that can be dissolved or undone through tzafun. In the meantime, though, we are dealing with Abaye. So as Abaye cites from Shimon ben Yehuda as an opinion that says Shinui does not have an effect. It doesn't acquire. Ha damoron. We already said that. We stated that in the source where the star appeared above. Beishamai maihi. Where do we find Beishamai viewing Shinui in this fashion? Namely, that it doesn't result in change. It doesn't. The Shinui doesn't result in acquisition or change of ownership. Desanya. Now we have a source that deals with the topic that in Hebrew we call Esnan Zoyna. We've discussed this in recent past. This is a payment made to a harlot for her services. If the item paid to her that she is offered in payment is instead of cash, but it's rather an item that ordinarily is an item that would be offered in the Beis HaMikdash. Since it was given to a harlot for her services, it cannot be offered as a sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash. So, with that background in mind, Nosan lo chitin besnana v'son seilas. A zona received as payment for her harlotry services wheat. And she processed it into seilas, flour. Zeisim v'son shemen. She was given olives, and she processed them into olive oil. Anovim v'son yayin, grapes, and she made them into wine. Flour, oil, and wine are products that ordinarily are used in the Beis HaMikdash as part of the sacrificial service. In this particular case, the Zona received the raw material, and she processed it into the final product. The final product is not what she received. She received the raw material. Tani chada aser, the Tanya idach muter. One Tanaic ruling is it's forbidden to be used on the altar. The other Tanaic ruling says it's allowed. The Omar Rav Yosef tells us Tani gurion de, and we continue at the top of Daf Tzadi Dalet, de me'as pork. Gurion is a gentleman's name, and he comes from Aspork. That's the name of a place. With regard to the two sources we just indicated, Beishamai Oysun or Beisil Matirin, we saw two unnamed sources at the bottom of Omid Beis. Tani Chada Osir, Tani Idoch Mutter. What Gurion from Asport does, he assigns names to those sources. Beishamai is the restrictive opinion, and Beisil allows. Let us think for a moment. Beis Shammai was brought into this discussion. He received a double underline as being one of those opinions that would say Shinui b'Kamei, fact that a Shinui was done, is of no significance. It doesn't change the status of the item. It doesn't change ownership. In this case, it doesn't change the status. The status originally was given as raw material was given to the Zona as payment. So what? She changed it. It's still an Esnan. It's still viewed as that which she received as payment. And hence, it cannot be used as an offering in the Beis HaMikdash. And now the Gemara goes back and forth between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Where does each one learn their point of view from? So, my time de Beis Shammai. What's the basis of Beis Shammai? We have a pasuk that's cited in partial form. I think we'll benefit by looking in our margin where we have we've included the complete pasuk, Dvarim, Perek Chof Gimel Pasuk Yutes, The pasuk says, "Lo sovi esnan zoyna umefir kelev beis Hashem elokecha lechol neder ki toyavas Hashem elokecha gam shnehem." Now the Gemara, Omar Kra. What is the reason for Beis Shammai? Well, the pasuk says gam shnehem. That expression l'rabois shinuyehem. So it appears that there's a type of what we call play on words, shnehem, which means the two of them. In the pasuk, there was a reference to two kinds of payments. One called an esnan zona, the other called mafir kelev. But Beis Shammai darshens it to say even shinuyehem are prohibited. Even the item, if it undergoes change, remains with the status of esnan zona, payment to the harlot, and hence forbidden as a sacrifice. Ubeis Hillel Omar Kra Haim Velo Shinuyehem. In the Pasuk, the word appeared Shnehem, and that indicates those two things, them and only them. Them, that which is given to the Zona is prohibited, but not the change. If the item underwent change, that's not under the prohibition of Esnan Zona. Ubeis Shammai Hak Siv Haim. Well, what does Beis Shammai do with the hey mem expression, meaning them, seemingly limited? Hahu miboyalei, Beis Shammai needs it for something else. Haim velo vlo the same. If an esnan was given in the form of an animal to the zona, and that animal gives birth to an offspring, the offspring is kosher for a sacrifice. So haim is a limitation expression as far as Beis Shammai is concerned. It limits the prohibition to the animal itself given to her as payment, not to the animal's offspring. Ubeis Hillel, what about Beis Hillel? Tarti Shamas Mino, he learns both from the hey mem expression. Haim velo shinuyehem, only the original item is prohibited, not the developed or changed processed item. And hey, velo, velo to Sam, and only the original animal would be prohibited as a sacrifice, the original animal given to the Zona as payment, and not the offspring. Question. Ubeis Hillel Nami Hoksiv Gam. We saw above that Beis Shammai Darshan Gam Shinu Yehem, because of the word Gam, he was able to include the change as being prohibited. What does Beis Hillel do with that word? The Gemara says Gam Le Beis Hillel Kashya. The word gam in this pasuk, as far as Beis Hillel is concerned, what is to be derived from it is a difficulty. We don't have an answer. Or Beis Hillel doesn't have a particular law that he derives from gam. Rebbe Lozer ben Yankov Maihi. What's the source in which Rebbe Lozer ben Yankov that indicates shinui doesn't change? Imagine someone stole a saws, a measure, a specific measure of wheat. Tochana, he ground it. Losha, he kneaded it. Vafa, he baked it. The hifrish mimeno chala, and then tithed the chala tithe. One separates from dough a special tithe that he gives to a kohen. It's called chala, and when tithing it, so a bracha is made. Ketzad mevorech, how is the bracha to be recited? And we say ein ze mevorech elo menayitz. There's an extensive discussion in the commentaries as to what this phrase means in terms of practical halacha. We're going to just translate literally, not committing ourselves to either position. It says this is not a bracha. It is scorning. V'al ze ne'emar botzea beirach ni'etz Hashem. The thief that makes a brocha is scorning the Almighty. For our purposes, we see what's Reb Lezer ben Yankov's attitude. The fact that even though the stolen item was raw wheat, and even though it underwent so much change, it remains the original stolen item. How in the world can a thief make a brocha over that which is stolen. Ah, you'll say, but he didn't steal the baked good. As far as Reb Lozer Ben Yankov is concerned, the baked good is the same as the original stolen wheat. Change is of no significance. And we call that shinui b'mekoymatli made. It remains, even though it underwent physical change, it remains what it originally was, stolen wheat. Reb Shimon ben Elozer Maihi, where do we see Reb Shimon ben Elozer reflecting this idea of shinui b'mekoymatli made? The Sanya. Chlal ze Omar Reb Shimon ben Elozer. The following rule is something that Reb Shimon ben Elozer says. Kol shevach shishpiach gazlon yodoy al hilyona. Any improvement that the thief makes in the item, he has the upper hand. We're reading a source, by the way, which the Gemara will then ask for clarification. So if things don't appear clear as we read it, have no fear. Rotza noitel shvachai, rotza oimer lo harei shelcha lefanecha. We said the thief has the upper hand. Well, he can take the item with its improvement, or he can say, "Hare shel chalafanech," here, take your thing. Now, the Gemara asks, "My ka'omar." Rashi explains what the difficulty with this source is that when you see the expression "Hare shel chalafanech," that is generally associated with something that underwent depreciation. Some type of ruination, something that was worth more at the original point, and then it became devalued, it was weakened or ruined. So the one responsible to returning it would say, here, take your thing back as it is with its depreciation. So in what we read so far, we saw only an item of improvement featured. Where then is there relevance of the phrase Harei Shel Chalafanecha? Hence, the Gemara is asking, "My Komar, what is being said here?" Omar of Sheishes Hafi Komar. This is what the source is saying. Hishvicha, if he improved the item, no tail shvacho. He takes the improvement. Kichesh, if it underwent depreciation, Omer lo Harei Shel Chalafanecha. Take your item back, even though when I stole it, it was something of a greater improved condition, greater value, and now it's become depressed, decreased in value. Take it as it is. The shinui b'mekomo omeid. The change is of no significance. It doesn't make any difference. Well, if change doesn't make any difference, ihachi afilu ishbiach nami, then even with regard to improvement, the thief should give back the item with its improvement, with its increased value and betterment. Return it with the improvement. And yet the source says, no, the thief can keep it. Amri, that's a technical point, and Morris says that the reason the thief can keep it is nei takonas hashovim. That's a special enactment. A takonas, an enactment, hashovim to encourage people to repent, to return, to encourage thieves to return items. If the thief knows that he has an item that he stole that he improved, that as a result of that he can keep it. Even though by letter of law he can't keep it, by telling him that he can keep it, that will motivate him to repay the original value of the item, which is a lesser amount, and be able to keep the improved item. That's a special enactment. But by letter of the law, whether it diminished in value or improved, the item is to be given back as is, because shinui b'mkoma omeid, as far as Reb Shimon ben Elozer is concerned. Rabbi Shmuel Maihi, where do we see Rabbi Shmuel having this opinion? Desanya, here we have a source that deals with another tithe. It's called payah. Payah is the requirement of leaving a corner of one's field unharvested available to the poor. Mitzvahs peah lahafrish min hakoma. The proper way of fulfilling the mitzvah peah is to have it tithed while the grains are still standing. Koma means standing. Standing grains. Lo hifrish min hakoma, mafrish min omrim. Let us say he harvested his entire field. So he tithes the peah from harvested sheaves. Lo hifrish min omrim, mafrish min akri. If he still went on and gathered in all of the sheaves, making a pile out of them, so he's mafrish from the pile of grains. Ad shelo mircho. This is true until the miruach process. Miruach process is where, after a pile is formed, he then smooths down the pile to make it flat or a uniform type pile. Mircho, if he did miruach to it, to the pile of grain, me'aser v'noseinu. At that point, the owner has to first tithe the meiser tithe. Mishum Rabbi Yishmael Amru Af Mafrish Min Ho'isa V'Nosein Lo. Rabbi Yishmael says that even if a person took those grains from which he did not leave the peah originally, and he baked it, or he made it into dough, he is to tithe the peah from the dough. According to the Tanakama, at that point, the owner would have acquired it for himself, b'shinui, and there would be no peah tithe expected anymore. But as far as Rabbi Shmuel is concerned, there is no acquisition, even though it underwent such significant change into dough. As we see, he still has to give the peah tithe. Omar Le Rav Papa Labaye. Rav Papa asks, we have a list of very significant Tanoim, all of them seeming to hold like Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai, as I'm sure many of you are familiar, represents an opinion that's not generally followed as the opinion that reflects actual halacha. So, he asked, Rav Papa asked Abai, Ichbal kolhani tanoi la'ashmini to Beis Shammai? Do all of these additional tanoim trouble themselves to issue rulings like that of Beis Shammai when they know fully well that we don't follow Beis Shammai rulings? Omar Lei, so Abai answers Rav Papa. Abai, by the way, was the one who Abai presented this list of tanoim. So Abai says to Rav Papa, Hachi ko amri. This is what they are saying. Lo nechliku Beis Shammai u'Beis Hillel b'dofer zeh. According to them, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel don't argue over this matter. In their outlook, their world of thinking, there is no disagreement between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel on these matters, and namely that they both hold that shinui bimkomo omeid. Mirza Shemin in our next shiur will pick up from this presentation of Abaye with Rava's response. You can see he'll go through the opinions one by one, indicating that each one of them don't hold shinui b'mekom omeid. Why did each one say what they did in their respective sources? That is something Rava will explain. So Mirza Shem, in our next shiur, we're not going to dwell on too much by way of introduction, assuming that everyone will have already learned this shiur, enabling us to move immediately into Rava's response. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.